Good evening, everyone.
Hello. Good evening.
And my welcome as well. And gratitude for you being here and the things that you did in your life to arrange it so it's possible for you to be here and co-create this retreat with everyone. It's no small thing, and I'm grateful to see so many here for this retreat. I also want to especially thank the Springs Mountain Sangha Steering Committee and leaders and Sarah for making it possible for Sarah and I to teach a retreat together formally. You know, in the last few years, maybe I've come to a retreat and given a talk here and there, but it's been 2 or 3 years, I don't know exactly, since we've actually led a retreat together and taught together, and I'm very grateful for that, for this opportunity and the decision you made to support that. So thank you all. And I love retreats, so I'm thankful to be here for myself. Like, yay, here we are. And as we're settling into retreat, and as I was moving into this, I was remembering this kind of advice I gave to myself, or didn't necessarily follow, but noticed it took care of itself over time. And it would be the phenomenon of coming to a retreat, and I'd notice this transformation in the way I entered it versus the way that I ended up at the end of it. And it would happen at every retreat. And it became easier over time to slip into retreat and allow retreat to slip into me. So the advice that I gave myself, it used to be based upon two different ancestors of ours. One who was had a little more oomph and some kind of pointedness to the engagement with things. And then another one who's a little more open and just, okay, is that so, and flowing along with things. But then over time, getting to know the ancestors better, it's actually just one person, one ancestor, who at one point was that determined person, and then later on had transformed into something else. So the advice I would give myself is, be less like Daishan and more like Daishan. And that doesn't make sense unless I tell you a little bit about Daishan. And to help, his teaching name was Daishan, but in his earlier days, when he was a young man and before he had come to Zen, he was an expert in the on the Diamond Sutra. He'd read all about it. So they called him Diamond Zhao. He had that reputation. And I won't tell you the full story, but basically his path was an expert in the Diamond Sutra, and you heard about this Zen thing happening down south and these heretics that he decided he was going to go straighten them out. So he grabbed all of his commentaries and books and headed down to find the Zen temple, find these Zen people and teach them from what he knew and straighten them out, right? Before he even met an official Zen person at a temple, he stopped at a tea house to get some refreshments and met up with an infamous tea granny, as we call them. And she, in their brief exchange, when he just wanted something to eat and drink, she wasn't just, as a tea granny, they're usually trickier than some of the Zen teachers. Basically, she overturned his cart and started having him question himself, just in a simple exchange. And instead of, in that moment, instead of trying to go and sort things out, he just said, "Where's the nearest Zen temple? Because obviously you've got something going on and I need to get to that place and see what's happening." So he went to the Zen temple, met with the teacher, things happened, and the next day after the meeting, He burnt all of his books, all of his commentaries, gave it up, and entered into Zen in a different way. But that was the determined Diamond Zhou of his early years. Then we fast forward many years to when he's an older teacher, and as we do here, there's the claps and dings that lead us and guide us as to what we should be doing next. And one of those things is a drum that would sound to call people for the meal, to bring their bowls and stuff back at the temple in those days. So one day, Daishan had his bowls in his hand and he's walking over to the meal hall. But there hadn't been a drum or anything. He was just walking over there. And Zhui Feng, who was in charge of beating the drum and calling people, noticed this and said, "Hey, old teacher, what are you doing? The drum hasn't sounded for the meal yet." So he kind of caught him out there, right? Daishan just looks and, turns back gently and just goes back to his room. Doesn't try to assert himself, doesn't try to sort things out or do anything other than meet that situation. And, "Oh, is that so?" He goes back to his room. So sometimes entering a retreat, we can be a little bit more on the line of Diamond Zhou. The determination that we come here with. I think about the work it takes to get here. You know, we've done a lot of work, the packing and the organizing and getting here and setting up. That's a different kind of energy, maybe that we even had a few days ago. We just picked it up all of a sudden and here we are. But we also might come with the determination of what we expect at a retreat, what we want to get out of it. And we're determined to make it happen, yeah? And that's okay. Notice where you're at for yourself. Do you have something you're hoping for? Is there some kind of determination that's going on? And, you know, now that we're here, you can release the energy of all that it took to get here and sink into this place. And then see, what is it? What's next? What's calling you here? And during the course of the retreat, we also become Zhui Feng, the guy who's, "Oh, the bell didn't sound. What are you doing?" We might notice, "Oh, the bell's supposed to be sounding. Why isn't it? And why are we sitting so long? We should be done by now. That person must have fallen." You know, all this kind of stuff. We might be looking out at what others are doing. And we might also point that Zhui Feng eye at ourselves and, "Oh, you're not supposed to be doing that." Right? And that's part of what happens at retreat too, and that's okay as well. What I've found is retreat itself always seems to be that older Daishan. It welcomes whatever we bring to it with, "Oh, is that so?" And partners with us. And it turns and goes where it needs to go in response to us and how we're meeting it. But it's also inviting us to partner with it, to be a little bit more Daishan. So, when you meet the Diamond Zhous or the Zhui Fengs within yourself or around you, what might it be like to simply welcome that, open the space to allow that to be there, but not really have to do anything about it? To trust the retreat to carry you along in that gentle way of call and response. Just flowing into what's next, following the bells and the clacks. Letting go of the things that you usually use to orient yourself and navigate yourself through the world. What is it like to drop that and allow the retreat to just carry you along? To partner with Daishan, the old man. It's something that happens naturally in my experience, regardless of what I bring. And I can trust that I can't break retreat. I can't unretreat the retreat. Retreat is going to be retreat. But I can partner with it in different ways. So as Frank read in the poem, all are welcome here, all of the things that we bring, all of the things that we meet. And we can also be retreat ourselves individually and be that welcome to all that is here and all that we meet and provide that space. Retreat, meeting retreat. Retreat, becoming retreat. Step by step. So I don't think you need to do anything particular, but just notice, how is it? Again and again. How are you meeting things? How are things meeting you? And lean back into it all and trust it to carry you along. You can't break it. I think that's why I love retreat. It welcomes us. It abides with us and within us, and it is us. So welcome, and thank you, and enjoy.
Before I say anything, I want to just leave a little space for you to let that absorb rather than pile more words onto it. So let's just pause for a minute and let you. So a third welcome and thank you, Bodhisattvas, for offering yourselves to this shared adventure. Offering to trust, offering to take time, to give time, to spend time. Together, just doing seshin, touching your heart mind, and letting everything else wait. We're so fortunate that we are able to do that. And that we can offer that in a time of difficulty. It's a rare offering, and I'm especially feeling this time as we come into retreat, grateful to be sitting in this room, which feels very much like a mandala to me, and our collected bodies have a feeling of sacred space here. So it feels to me as if this is a prayer we offer for the world to trust a retreat, to just be the retreat. It doesn't have to have another job, you know. It will be a retreat, and we are it. And the hanging behind the altar, which was made by Kaz Ta-Nehisi years ago, when he was here leading a workshop, calligraphy workshop, is bliss. And I'm particularly moved by sitting across from bliss for this retreat, because we think of bliss, and really I think, at least I often think of bliss as a kind of hyperbole, you know, it's like, or that thing that we might be chasing after, but this is not that bliss. I think this is a bliss that is absolutely available to us, that is the offering of the retreat that we make. It is that very simple absence of anything needed. It's the nothing missing moment that is completely available to us here as we travel in a way the road that Deshan traveled in his life, and allowing ourselves to be touched. I was thinking, what happened to Deshan, right? In the intervening years. And what I'm picturing, what I imagine is he was weathered. And I've been thinking a lot about that word weathering, about how our earth is weathered. And changes, yeah, as it's weathered by us and by all the other factors. And we're, and I'm weathered, and we are weathered, and we weather things. We're in the middle of weathering something. And that, in that weathering, the all of the thick protections that we put up around ourselves maybe get softened. Maybe they start to dissolve and they get less rigid and they don't hold up very well, actually. They get weathered. And so we too, in our retreat, can let ourselves be completely like a weathered being, touchable by everything. And there's nothing that we have to do to make that happen but offer ourselves to it. Offer ourselves to be completely touchable to the floor, to the light, to the conversation of owls outside the window, to the breeze, to each other, without having to do anything extra about it. That's how we touch the heart-mind. We're simply touching and being touchable. What a privilege. And what an offering in a world that is so full of defense and offense. We don't have to do any defense and offense here. And we get to discover how unnecessary any defense and offense is as we find it rise inside of ourselves and pass. We just get to watch it show up and go away again. So I think bliss is not hyperbole. It's what we're here for. Take it.